Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live today from Hebron, home of the tombs of the mothers and fathers, to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome. Shalom and welcome to the Land of Israel Network, which broadcasts great stuff and the spirit of Israel to you wherever you are. Shalom and welcome to my show, and it's great to be with you. And I must admit, I'm still a little bit in Hanukkah. I'm broadcasting the day after Hanukkah, and I'm still very much in the spirit of Hanukkah. And you know, Hanukkah just energizes me every year, and it just takes me like weeks to, I just keep thinking about it, about the message of Hanukkah. And I think that the message of Hanukkah is incredibly appropriate today. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about my vacation a little bit, because I like to talk about vacation in the land of Israel. And before I go on, I just want to give a credit to the intro music you just heard. That was Benny Friedman, who's a very, very talented singer, along with the very talented composer Ari Goldwag, and their new song, which has already, over almost 6 million views. It was published in February on YouTube. It's called Ivri Anochi, Ivri Anochi. And so let's do a little Hebrew lesson. So a lot of people, a lot of you out there who like to listen to the Land of Israel Network and my show, maybe to learn a few things in Hebrew, right? And you take your time, like my friend Cynthia, who takes her time to study the Hebrew language. Makes a lot of sense to me. That's the language that God created the world in. And so what is Ivri Anochi? And where does that that phrase even come from? Ivri Anochi ve'et Hashem Elokei Hashemayim ani oved. What is that? It is, Ivri Anochi means I am a Hebrew. And I serve God, the creator of heaven and earth. Elokei Hashemayim ani oved. Right? And the exact quote is, Vayomer Elohim, and he said to them, who is he? Jonah, right? Jonah on the boat. Jonah's on the boat, and there's a great storm. And he says to them, the other seamen on the boat, he says to them, Vayomer Elohim, Ivri Anochi. Ve'et Hashem, I am a Hebrew, and the he uses the name of the Tetragrammaton, the four-letter name of God, which is about God's eternity. Ve'et Hashem, Elokei Hashemayim, the God of heavens, ani yare, I fear, the basically God, the creator of heaven and earth, but in this case, and then he goes on to say, Asher asa et hayam ve'et hayabasha, the God of the heavens who created the earth. So that is where that phrase is from. And then Benny Friedman has done a great job of turning it into just a rocking song that's really about Jewish pride and being proud to be a Jew. Ivri Anochi ve'et Hashem Elokei Hashemayim ani yare, I serve or I fear the God of heaven. It's a great song, and I wanted to make a little intro music using that song. So check it out on YouTube. It's really something else. I was just on vacation in the land of Israel. Why do I stress vacation in the land of Israel? Because there's nothing like vacation in the land of Israel. The world is a beautiful place. Australia is beautiful, and Florida is beautiful. California is beautiful. Colorado is beautiful. And, everything is, the world is a beautiful place, and life is beautiful, right? When you get out from all the tensions and all the issues, there's a real beauty to life, and you can really celebrate every moment. New York City is beautiful, right? The deserts and the north and south poles and all those places, the forests, the sequoia trees, they're all so beautiful, right? But when you're here in the land of Israel and you're vacationing, you just get so much more, because first thing is, for me, I like to feel totally without any guilt, just totally joyful at being in love with something, right? And I don't want to feel in my heart, wow, why should I enjoy this Florida? Why should I enjoy this, the seashore in New Jersey? Why should I enjoy any of that? When really that's not mine, that's not the place I'm supposed to be loving so much. And when I go to the land of Israel and when I'm in love with it, I'm so doing the right thing. I'll give you an example also, which is like knowledge. If I spend some time on a video that's funny but really silly and not important, as opposed to seeing a video of either Jewish music or a rabbi speaking or some kind of great piece of knowledge being shared with me in Torah. When I do the latter, I'm in so much more of a holy and fulfilling. That was the word I was looking for before, fulfilling enterprise. So that is why I love to vacation in the land of Israel, because just walking in the land, seeing new places, that's a mitzvah. It's a commandment to do that, to see, to walk to new parts of the land of Israel. And you meet people, and you pray on the way, and you try to connect to what Abraham felt like. You really try to connect to maybe a concept that we don't think about a lot, but like the God of Abraham. Like, Abraham, how did you perceive it when you walked in this desert? Did you perceive God like this? Just thinking about that and trying to fill into those shoes of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Becca, Rachel, and Leah. By the way, in this song that I am a Hebrew, Ivri Anochi, it has a line and it says that we're all children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. It's really a beautiful song. So I was on vacation, and you know what I got to do this Hanukkah? The eighth day of Hanukkah, which is considered Zot Hanukkah. This is Hanukkah. On that day, last day of Hanukkah, which was yesterday, I got to pray the Mincha prayer as the sun was setting. I was on top of Masada. And we gathered. In truth, I'm going to be, you know, in all humility, I say I tried to gather. Hashem gave me the merit to try to gather and manage to gather 10 Jews. We ended up with 12 people, and we prayed in the ancient synagogue on top of Masada as the sun was setting on the last day of Hanukkah. And here's my, it was such a high moment for me, really. It was such a high moment to achieve that. And it was really, the sun was setting, it was the last moment. It was like the mountain closes, Masada, you know, this great mountain fortress where the rebels who stood against the Romans in 73 of the Common Era, in the end, fought for years against them. And then like 8,000 troops came, Roman troops of the 10th Legion came to destroy these Jews. And in the end, when they got there, they found the Jews had killed themselves rather than allow themselves to be taken into the hands of these barbarian Romans. And so it's an amazing kind of last stand place and reborn in our time, an amazing desert fortress, very beautiful places. And to pray there on Zot Hanukkah was very meaningful to me. One of the things that I feel such a challenge in, my friends, and this I want you to think about, which is, all right, so I had this great high, and we came, and that was at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The mountain was closing. I was going to say they were closing Masada. They closed Masada at 4 p.m. And we were up there, and like at 3:35, we prayed this afternoon prayer on Masada, the last day, and got to say the Al Hanisim prayer, the miracles prayer. And later on, we went to a beautiful, my friends and I and my family, we went to this fabulous kids playground, which was really, it's like world class, a huge, huge playground. Where? In the desert city of Arad. In the desert city of Arad. It was fabulous. And we just had the greatest, greatest Hanukkah vacation ever. All together. But when I got home to Efrat, on already at the after the holiday had passed, a good buddy of mine, his name is Professor Zev Magen. Look him up. He's a very famous guy. He's written a lot of great books, Professor Zev Magen, and he's always been a great visionary. And he calls me up, and he says, "Yishai, we're in trouble." I said to him, "What's the problem, Zev?" He says, "Listen, I was in the Sharonim Mall in the Sharon, and guess what? Folks, everybody brace yourselves for what I'm about to tell you. In the Sharonim Mall, it was all decorated with Christmas. Christmas was the decorations. And I'm talking about like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Santa, you know, that business. And this unbelievable, you know, Coca-Cola created mythology, a modern day American, you know, cartoonish mythology that is really nothing more than propaganda for selling products, you know, just advertising material, and a whole theme there. And I'm going to talk about that theme because there's an aspect of that theme that I respect very much. But generally speaking, that here during Hanukkah, this holiday that the Book of Maccabees 1 and 2 describes, and Josephus and the rabbis make into a holy holiday with commandments, with redemption, with cleaning out the dirt and the defilement that was built on top of the Temple Mount, and attaining liberty and attaining self-determination for the Jewish people in those days, in our time, with incredible Jewish heroes, Judah Maccabee, Matityahu, with incredible enemies who wanted to stop the light of Israel, and then this resurrection, this fixing, this renewal. I used to call this the Giuliani holiday because I lived in New York City and around New York City when Rudolph Giuliani took over. And all those promises that every other mayor had made to clean up New York, he fulfilled with tremendous alacrity and ability. And I remember thinking to myself, wow. I remember thinking to myself, wow, things can change. Things can change. A human being, even a lone human being, can take a system and really change it. And it will change in front of your eyes. You know, not everything is the way it was yesterday. So instead of celebrating this tremendous holiday, which is beautiful, meaningful, and not even heavy in terms of ritual law, instead, this cheap, easy, and relatively meaningless, and certainly meaningless for Israel, for the Jewish people. And that's where it becomes not only meaningless, but also incredibly dangerous and pernicious, right? It like enters, it seeps through. The culture war is back. And just like the Maccabees had to push back on the Hellenists, so too we have to, in our generation, take back Hanukkah. And here's where I'm going to actually bring it back to Christmas, which is like, it's like the Grinch, you know, who stole Christmas. It's like, and you know, you got to take effort in order to steal it back and to win it back. We got to fight back for Hanukkah. We got to make Hanukkah great again, if you will. You got to make Hanukkah great again. And we have to push back on cultural, this seeping in of meaninglessness, of cultural superficiality, which is such an easy replacement. See, my friends, there's replacement theologies, there's replacement narratives, and there's also replacement culture. It's so easy to replace it with these empty calories because they're yummy. They're simple. They're happy. They're jolly. They're not complicated and political. There's no infighting. It's all happy-go-lucky. It speaks to this place in us that just, it's ease. It's comfort. And Hanukkah is not as comfortable. It's true. It's just. It's glorious. It's rebellious. It's fulfillment, it's blood, it's depth, right? These are great messages, you know, honor, chivalry, light. These are great themes, but they're not light themes. And we have to create, and this is what my friends Zev and I are going to do. And I want you to remind me about this, friend. So I want you to write me an email when you get a chance. And not even now, maybe you remind me in 6 months. We got to make a task force on Hanukkah. We got to win back Hanukkah. We got to make Hanukkah great again. We got to make Hanukkah so big. And here's where I want to actually tip my hat to Christmas. Not Christmas in Israel. I have nothing to tip my hat to for Christmas in Israel, except for those Gentiles who feel the need. And even that, I don't think, you know, it should not be a big public thing. Certainly not Christmas trees whose roots are in idolatry. You know, I think that within Israel, Friends of Israel should have freedom of worship, but to a certain degree, because this is God's land here. And in God's land, he says, make some room for me I don't want, you know, I don't want crosses here, and I don't want, you know, people bowing down to the death cult of Allah either. I want a place, God says to the Jewish people, that you could serve me and that I have a little room in this world for the I-Thou relationship and to serve, that people will come to serve God through the consciousness of the God of Israel, the God of Israel, right? If you can bow to the God of Israel, okay, you know, you could have a place here. In any case, we've got to create a task force to push back on this cultural, it's like one of these animals that come into an ecosystem, and these animals are somehow, you know, predatory and very, they take over a climate, an ecosystem. That is exactly where Christmas is, and we got to push it back. We got to be the new Maccabees fighting specifically for Hanukkah. Because if Christmas beats out Hanukkah in this country, we're done for. We're done for. This whole thing, this whole project could be forgotten. If the holy menorah is replaced with ho 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 and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you could just you know, turn off the keys on the whole damn thing. There's no point to it. If that is what's entering the young minds of people. So my friend Zev says to me, we gotta, you know, spread more light of what Hanukkah really is, but we also have to boycott. We got to go nuts on these store owners and tell them no way. And by the way, I do want to recognize one store which goes all out for Hanukkah. Of course, they have an interest in it, but they go all out, and that's the Roladin Bakery, where in the Mamilla Mall, they put out a menorah in the middle of the store and have every donut sufganiya imaginable with creativity, with beauty. It's wonderful stuff. In any case, if I sound harsh, don't misunderstand me. I'm not coming here to smash, you know, well, I am here to smash some idols, and that's my Jewish prerogative, to smash some idols. And my good friends who are not of our religion, who love Israel, you have to also understand something. Like, the only way that we have been able to survive is through our zealotry, right? We have to be zealous for God. God says, you know, love me zealously. And that's how Judaism can survive, because there's so many forces out there. The minute I accept a certain kind of mediocrity, a certain kind of lightheartedness, you know, a kind of equality of all other things to my thing, it'll be done. That's exactly the point. Christmas cannot be allowed to enter. And it has come with the loss of secular Israeli identity. The loss of secular Israeli identity has created an atmosphere in Israel where they're not plugged into Hebrewness. They used to be plugged into secular national Hebrewness, right? But now you've lost that. We got to bring that love of our culture back. And the problem has been is that if the culture, Jewish culture, is not tied into Jewish law, the study of Torah, in a zealousness for the land, for the Torah, for God. And by the way, I want to separate four separate streams. Help me come back to what I was saying to you in a second, but four separate streams that you should always keep in your mind. There is the land, there is the people, there is the Torah, and there is God. Right? There is, why do I say that? There is the land, you understand that. Then there's the people. Now the people are Hebrews or Jews or children of Israel without anything. Even as empty vessels, there's something very holy about the Jewish people. Then there is the keeping of the Torah. And that's the synergy of the godly vision, the godly dream, the godly truth, together with the society, the Hebrew-Israeli-Jewish society, that mixes in with Torah. When we keep the Torah and study the Torah, you know, then there's a synergy with the land, there's a synergy with the people, and there's a synergy with the God above. Now, I used to think that there was only three, and it made a lot more sense to me to say God, the people, and the land below. But now I realize that there's really four. It's really four separate components that have to meld together. The land below your feet, the Holy Land, the land of Israel, Jerusalem, Hebron, Beersheba, Tzfat. And then you have the society, the Jewish people. 6 million, more than 6 million now in this land. Keeping the Torah, the knowledge of the Torah, as a separate entity than even God. There's a very famous phrase that says, God says, I wish they would even keep my Torah, even if they would forget me, but just keep my Torah because my Torah is true, right? And then there's above Torah even is a relationship that one has to have to God directly. One has to have a relationship with God that is talking to him and feeling him in your life and really putting him in your consciousness, in your heart and in your head and in front of your eyes and putting the godly consciousness that sometimes even it has a different element than Torah. Torah is looking into the book and trying to find God and understanding our lives and the law and all in that book. But then there has to be a time when you take your head out of the book and look up to God and see him in your life, see him in the steps of your life. And when you don't have these, I would call it even a zealous love for these things, well, Judaism can become like an empty vessel. And this is what, you know, Rabbi Kahana was always concerned with, that the Israeli Jews, and of course, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was also very concerned with this, is that Israelis would become a kind of Hebrew-speaking Gentile, right? With a kind of vacuum in their soul that is willing to accept Christmas or any other television program, sports, whatever, something that'll fill that Jewish soul up, entertain it, you know, and just fill it up instead of that void. And we have to push back. What the Maccabees did, yes, they lit the light, they purified, but they also fought the Hellenists. And then just remember, this was a dual war. It was a war against the enemies and also against the Hellenists within, who had culturally, you know, taken over the land. So my friends, I really, in short, I want to say we have to take back Christmas. No, just joking. We got to push back Christmas, take back Hanukkah. You know, even I was, and here's the other thing about Christmas that I do like. This is, I think, what my brain was subconsciously signaling. There is something about Christmas I do like, and I'm jealous of, okay? And that is, what I like about Christmas is that when you go to America, you could smell it, you could hear it, you could smell it in the smells of the holidays, you could hear it in the music of the holidays, and you could certainly see it, right? Everywhere. And that is what I want to help Hanukkah happen. Somebody said, yeah, we keep Hanukkah on a low flame. Forget that. The way to bring back Hanukkah and push back other influences is by doing it big, by making it commercial, making it fun. There should be selling in the stores the Judah Maccabee swords, okay, for kids. You know, something you could, you know, like the Jedi swords that light up, but not Jedi, but Judai, right? Judah Maccabee. It's like these things are so, you know, I feel so strongly about them. And if you think about what I'm saying about Hanukkah, about the holiday, that's actually what Hanukkah was about in their day. I mean, you'd say, what we have to do today for Hanukkah is what they did for the nation back then. Right, the light of Hanukkah was this pushing back on this, on these forces of forgetfulness, of darkness. And Hanukkah was about memory. And the rabbis say looking at the candles helps your memory, helps you remember. Of course, it's a great mnemonic for the spirit of Israel. We have to do today for Hanukkah what the Maccabees did for Israel back then. We've got to fight for Hanukkah. And I hope that you will join me next year and really be a Hanukkah warrior wherever you are. Light those candles and make it big. Make it big. For example, my brother let me borrow some twinkle lights. And I put some twinkle lights outside of my big porch out there just to give people a feeling like, bam, it's a big holiday out there outside. Like you drive, you should be like, you should feel that joy, feel that light in the middle of the night. Anyway, so we're going to create a task force for Hanukkah. If you agree with me about that or have any thoughts, or maybe you think that Christmas should win, right? Maybe you think. Maybe you want to mess with me. Maybe you want to start up and, you know, you want to rumble. So rumble, go ahead. You can rumble at me and you can rampage at me by writing me an email, Yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Tonight, by the way, I'll be, this Thursday night, there's a new course that I recorded for Yeshiva for the Nations through the folks at Breaking Israel News. And I'll be doing a webinar tonight about the seven holy cities. I think I have already some 400 people scheduled to join me tonight in this incredible webinar about the seven holy cities of the land of Israel. That's, the seven holy cities are, to me, a menorah, a chanukah, like they're the lights of the land of Israel. Okay, so that was one thing. Oh, now I wanted to say something about President Trump. President Trump gave a long talk at the White House about Hanukkah. And I thought to myself, President Trump is really a lot like Giuliani, a lot like that very same spirit that I was talking about, which is like, make something that was good, make it great again, make it great again. Beautify it once again. Make it bigger than it is right now. Let its light shine. That's what he says about America. And I think that is why President Trump is also into Hanukkah. I think he's into Hanukkah. Wonder, our amazing, our boy wonder engineer, Ben Bresky, to add a little bit of audio from President Trump's talk at the White House about Hanukkah. Let's listen to that for a few minutes.
This evening we gather to celebrate the story that is told in Jewish homes across the country and all over the world, a story that began more than 2,000 years ago with a tyrant made practicing the Jewish faith punishable by death. He desecrated the Jewish temple, including the Holy of Holies. But a small band of Jewish patriots rose up, defeated a mighty army, and soon reclaimed their freedom. But the miracle of the Maccabees did not end there. As they prepared to rededicate the temple, they found only enough oil to light the lamp for a single night. Soon, all were stunned to find that for 8 days, the lamp continued to burn brightly, a sign of God's presence in his dwelling place and a symbol of the faith and resilience of the Jewish people. You do have faith and you do have resilience. The miracle of Hanukkah is the miracle of Israel. The descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob have endured unthinkable persecution and oppression. But no force has ever crushed your spirit, and no evil has ever extinguished your faith. And that is why the Jewish people shine as a light to all nations. And right now, I'm thinking about what's going on and the love that's all over Israel and all about Jerusalem. On behalf of all Americans, I also want to say how grateful I am for Jewish congregations throughout our country. You cherish your families, support your communities, and uplift our beloved country. Hanukkah is a time for Jewish families around the world to celebrate the miracles of the past and promises of the future. We are proud to stand with the people of Israel and to renew our enduring bond. This evening, we are blessed to have two very special Hanukkah lamps for this celebration. The menorah on my left has been lit every year since the earliest days of our nation. It comes from the first American Jewish congregation whose original members came to this land in the 1650s. That's a long time ago. It's a symbol of the history and home the Jewish people made in the United States.
Right. So there you go. That was President Trump at the White House talking about Hanukkah. And again, I really think that President Trump with his idea of make America great again. And I've even seen memes that people say make Hanukkah great again. And I really like that. Let's make Hanukkah great again. That's what we have to do. That makes a lot of sense to me. By the way, I also saw his name is Issa Amru, and he is an evil anti-Israel, anti-rights of Jewish people in Judea and Samaria activist. He's got a movement called Youth Against Settlements, and yet he manages to pawn himself off in the era of fake news, fake countries, fake history, fake human rights. He is a master of those things. And he wrote, you know, President Trump, make Palestine great again. And I thought to myself, and I wrote and I tweeted back, there's no greater phoniness than this, make Palestine great again. Not only was, you know, not only will it not be great again, but it was never great to begin with. There was no Palestine. It's a modern invention. It's an absolutely created mythology. It's a little bit more real than Santa, because there is, I have to admit, a Palestinian Authority which controls, very sadly, swaths of the land of Israel. That is true. But at the same time, there is no historical Palestine. You can't make it great again. It was never great to begin with, as is well known. There is no coins of Palestine from the past. There is no Palestinian president or king before Yasser Arafat. They have no unique language or cuisine or anything that would give you a sense that there's somehow a unique culture. It is an Arab culture of mostly migrants that came to the land of Israel, mostly by the British assistance to create an influx of Arabs to this area. So there you go. You know, not only am I talking about pushing back on Christmas, and of course I'm not talking about, you know, I'm talking about the culture of it all. Certainly there's an effort to push back on that, there should be an effort to push back on that. But even the greater enemy today, a related enemy, is the other great created mythology, which is Palestine. Yes, indeed, we are living in a time where there is contra narratives, alternative narratives, or replacement narratives. That's what I really think of them as. I really think of them as replacement narratives. And replacement narratives they can be deep, right? They could be deeply anti-Semitic, or we could just suffer from kind of a bourgeois, right? So make Palestine great again is an alternative narrative created to destroy Israel. But Christmas is not created to destroy Israel. It's just empty calories. It's like eating McDonald's. It's all good. You know, it's just a bite here, or watching some, you know, another game of sports, another thing. And it's not really created, but it is subtly very pernicious, enters the mind and replaces it with emptiness. How many kids today can you talk to them about Star Wars? Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. How many kids can you talk about this stuff? Like, you would have thought that Star Wars would have already been finished so long ago. But you can talk to kids about Star Wars endlessly, right? But how many kids can you talk about the stories of the Bible in a meaningful way, in an exciting way? How many kids are turned on by the Maccabees today? It just seems kind of, it's all kind of, you know, it's like, it's that modern marketing has made it to speak the language of cool. But the Bible doesn't, and that is a big problem that we have to fix. Okay, so let us do that by actually entering into the Bible and making the Bible great again, right? Let's make the Bible great again. Should we make the Bible great again? Let's make Hanukkah get great again. Let's make Israel great again. Let's make the Bible great again. I think there's a depth there, friends. I think that sometimes with these simple slogans. And I think that President Trump has really this one, which is make something great again, and the other one, which is the hashtag fake something. I actually think that with these tremendously simple phrases, he has hit the head, at least for me, on both of those issues. One is to bring up the light of Israel, and the other one is to recognize that there's these alternative replacement narratives that we've got to push back on. Okay, let's go into the Torah portion, my friends. Let's do it together. And maybe this is a great time before we go into the Torah portion, just a little break. And I'll tell you that, next week, after you listen to the show after Shabbat, if you're in England or thinking about being in England, go to the Limud Conference that's happening in England, not in London, but in Birmingham this year. And you know who's going to be there? Eve Harrow is going to be there. Rabbi Mike Foyer is going to be there. Ashley Perry is going to be there, and Arya King is going to be there. awesome people are going to be at this like 5-day teaching conference. It's just going to be awesome. It's going to be mega. And I wish I was there. I was there last year. It was fabulous. And this year I will not be there. But it was just a great gig last year. And I'm sure that this year with these at least 4 fabulous speakers will be an awesome year. So welcome to that opportunity. And I hope you guys fly. I would buy a ticket right now and fly out to London if I was you. Fly out. Even if you can't make it to Sunday, go to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Just going to be awesome. The other thing I want to say is that we do have winners for the Tchelet contest, the first 3 for Tchelet. So I'm excited to send those out to you. Soon you'll be getting notification by email. And those who haven't gotten the notification, great try. Thank you so much. Also, last week I asked people to send me a picture of themselves lighting the Hanukkah candles. And I put one of those pictures up from my good friend Arthur. And I got other pictures from wonderful families. And one of my favorite pictures is from Miriam, who sent a fabulous picture of her grandson, Amichai Tzvi. And behind the menorah is her grand cat, Krembo. And she asked me to, she wants to be one of the winners of the J-Brick. She says, don't send me a beard cream from, don't send me a beard cream for this fabulous baby. She says, send me something from J-Brick for this beautiful young boy. I'm going to put this picture up on Facebook also. And I got other pictures on Facebook as well. But this is a great one. You're definitely going to get this picture up on my Facebook page, which, by the way, is inching towards 50,000 followers. So if you haven't followed my page yet, if you have a friend that, you know, you want to twist their arm or they owe you a favor or they're like the godfather of your children, if you can ask them to also join me on Facebook, that would be great. And there were other people who sent me fabulous pictures of their family. And you know what? It makes me so joyous to see these wonderful family photos of your Chanukiah and your cat and all this stuff. It just gives this broadcaster a lot of strong feelings of keep broadcasting, keep spreading the lights. We gotta encourage each other. If you think that I encourage you, then keep on encouraging me by writing me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. And also, of course, by donating, I do want to remind you, we had a whole schmooze about it last week, and that is about giving, and it's coming to the end of the fiscal year, which you know what that means. That means that you got to get rid of your cash and think to yourself, did I also tithe properly? Did I give to what God wants me to give to? And I'm asking myself as well. And so it's time to give a little bit right now. Give a little bit, give a lot. You know what I mean? Be the kind of person that when you go to your grave, you could say, yeah, I gave. I supported, I built. I am a hero for the land of Israel. Yes, I in my life I helped build Israel. I helped spread Torah. I did that. I want you to feel like you could say that about yourself. So of course you can go to yishaifleischer.com and support there, and of course this fabulous network, thelandofisrael.com, fabulous network of great shows, and we need your help. And Ari and Jeremy are doing great things also at the headquarters, at the farm out there. So a lot of great stuff. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't thank the good people that I work for, which is Hebron and the Hebron Fund, hebronfund.org, which keep the mothers and the fathers beautified and safe. Let's now go. I'm going to be putting up this picture of Miriam's grandson right after the show. But let us now go to the Torah portion. And it's a long one. There's a lot to talk about. But I'm going to hit just a few points that I wanted to make about the Torah portion. And the first one is that if you remember, I don't think we discussed it last week's show because I didn't have Rabbi Mike Foyer. And guess what? Rabbi Mike is going to England next week, so I won't have him next week either. I know. It's not as good without him. I know. But still, though, it's your, you know, it's me. It's me and you. Come on. So it's just me and you. Sometimes it's got to be just me and you. So last week, Joseph is recognizing that his brothers have come down to Egypt in order to gather food for their family, which is also in the midst of this famine. And he plays these tricks on them. He takes Simon, Shimon, puts them in jail. He says to them, you know, you're spies. You have to bring down your if you have a brother. Oh yeah, you have a brother. You have to bring him down and show me. I don't believe you. And then they come down with Benjamin. Oh, how do they come down with Benjamin? Jacob doesn't want to send Benjamin with those brothers. He refuses to do so because he doesn't want to lose yet another son. He's lost Joseph. He's lost Shimon. And then Reuven, the eldest son, says, listen, you could kill my two sons if I don't bring Benjamin back with you. And he doesn't even answer. Jacob is like, you're nuts. Okay, I'm not going to send my son with you guys. I'm not going to lose Benjamin as my beloved Rachel's last son. Finally, at the end of the Torah portion, it's time for the lion to rise up. That's right. There's a lion in Zion. Maybe I should call the show today Lion in Zion. Yes, there is a lion in Zion, and that lion is Judah. Judah, he's not the Judah Maccabee, but he is the lion in Zion. He is Judah. And Judah, he rises up and he says to his father, Dad, you give me Benjamin, you give me Benjamin, and I promise to bring back to you, or not, or if I don't bring him back to you, you can demand him of me. I'm putting my name on this. I'm taking responsibility. And the reason this is important is because Judah, and we're going to see this here as well, in this week's Torah portion, which is Judah coming up to Joseph and saying, hey, you, right? What happens is that Benjamin is caught with the chalice of Joseph. Certainly he did not steal that chalice. It was placed there, but you know, the servants of Yosef catch up with this ruler of Egypt, catch up with the brothers. They're like, you guys stole a chalice. They said, we never would steal a chalice. Then it's found in Benjamin's satchel. And basically they go back to Egypt and they go back to Joseph's house. And basically what this Joseph, this hidden Joseph says is, okay, I'm going to take Benjamin as a prisoner. And now it's time for Judah to rise up and to be the majestic king, the Lion of Zion that he is. And he steps up and he's going to say to Joseph in this week's parsha, which is called, and he approached, Vayigash, right? Judah approached him and said, please, my lord, let now your servant speak something into my lord's ear, and let not the wrath be kindled against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh, right? But if you listen to Rashi, if you listen to our great explanations, commentaries, you basically see that Judah is being, on the one hand, very servile. He is kind of bowing down to Joseph and begging him. At the same time, he's also saying to him, I'm a king, and I could take you on. I'm willing to kill if I have to, because I'm here to fight for my brother. And of course, all of this is what, friends? This is all a process of teshuvah. And what Judah is, he's a master of teshuvah. That could be the name of the show as well. Master of teshuvah. Think about those words. Master of teshuvah. Master of repentance. And we've seen it now twice. Once with Tamar, right? Where he says, okay, it looks like my son's wife, my departed son's wife has now become impregnated to harlotry. Kill her. She sends a signal saying, you see who I've become impregnated to? It's you. And he could have hidden the fact, but he says, no. She was right. She was just. And I was wrong. And he does teshuva. He does repentance. So too here. Remember, he's the one that was in charge of selling his brothers down to Egypt, man. Judah, you sold your brother to Egypt. Yes, I did. I fell. But I come back up, and now I'm going to stand up for Benjamin and say, over my dead body, will I allow Benjamin not to come up to our father Jacob? And there's this long soliloquy where he explains, where Judah explains to this hidden Joseph that he must bring Benjamin back, and that he's willing to trade his own life. He'd rather be the slave to this hidden Joseph instead of Benjamin, because Benjamin must go back to his father. And when Joseph sees that indeed there is repentance, there is change, when he recognizes that the sin of the brothers is no longer there, that they've changed. They've changed their ways. He breaks down, and these are the famous, very famous verse, chapter 45, verse 1. Now Joseph could not bear all those standing beside him, and he called out, "Take out everyone from me." So no one stood with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and he wept out loud. So the Egyptians heard, and the house of Pharaoh heard, and Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him because they were startled by his presence. I mean, imagine their situation. I mean, first thing, on top of being like, oh my God. Like, not only is Joseph alive, but he's not some kind of like poor artist in some quarter, some artist quarter. He's actually the ruler of Egypt. And then my next thought is, wait a minute. You've been letting us starve, be nervous, be full of fear. This whole time you've been playing with us and it's you? And then it would have been like, whoa, God has really done a thing here. And it seems like those dreams that he had were for real after all. So there's a lot of emotional things. And the Torah spares us. It just spares us all those thoughts. Just be creative. Like, imagine what they would have thought like. But just put yourself in their shoes for a second. When this Egyptian man, who's been so harsh with them, and is constantly threatening them and throwing them in jail, and they think that they're going to be imprisoned and die. The Torah tells us they think that they're going to be, you know, totally taken advantage of. Suddenly he takes off the hat or whatever, and there he is. That's Joseph. Joseph and his dreams. And it's not so easy to deal with Joseph, because immediately he's going to say things that I would characterize as annoying. Because he says, "For already 2 years of famine have passed in the midst of the land, and for another 5 years there will be neither plowing nor harvest." And what's annoying about that is that it's like he, and then he says, "And God sent me before you to make for you a remnant in the land, and to preserve it for you for great deliverance. I will deliver you. It's me. Those dreams are true." But there's something, you remember that Joseph like had a way of pushing off his brothers with his negative reports about them, with his kind of childish inability. And I wish Rabbi Mike was here, because I would ask him, don't you see that Joseph, in a sense, retains those characteristic traits of not noticing that when he says certain things, they seem superior, seem haughty? And indeed, we're also going to learn that he's going to embrace his brothers, and that when he embraces his brothers, he's going to give them gifts, but he's going to give more gifts to his brother Benjamin, basically falling for the same mistake that Jacob made with him, which is to favor somebody. And that's a problem. He continues that behavior. But in any case, now is going to come the great reunion. It's on the way. Of who? Of Jacob and Joseph. And what Joseph commands his brothers to do, and then Pharaoh commands him to do that very thing, which is send, and to Joseph, this is what Pharaoh says, "And you, Joseph, have been commanded to tell them, do this, take yourselves wagons from the land of Egypt for your young children and for your wives, and you shall carry your father and come." So the old patriarch, the father, is being brought down to Egypt. And when it says here, he gave them all changes of clothes, and to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothes. He favored him. Mistake. And to his father he sent the following: 10 he-donkeys carrying the best of Egypt, and 10 she-donkeys carrying grain, bread, and other food for his father on the way. And he sent off his brothers, and they went, and he said to them, do not tarry on the way. And they came to the land of Canaan, to their father Yaakov, and they told him, Joseph is still alive. Imagine this, right? After 20 years, Joseph is still alive. And he now rules over the entire land of Egypt. And Jacob, it says like, Vayafeg libo, like his heart like skipped a beat, or he couldn't accept it. His heart was like, He couldn't believe them. It says, Kilo he'emin lahem. He did not believe them. He did not believe. Remember what I told you last week, that some people have an ability to hear the news that they're out of jail or they have a renewal and they can believe it? At this moment, like, Jacob has a pause, like he can't believe it. However, the next verse says, and they told him all Joseph's words. And then he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him. And the spirit of their father Jacob was revived. Vatechi Ruach Yaakov avihem. Ruach Yaakov, the spirit of Jacob, was revived. When he saw the wagons, he saw the wagons. Of course, the wagons are a great sign. It's like you can hear words, but suddenly they're filled with wagons of stuff. The wagons to carry him. And, you know, it's like a Rolls Royce in the desert here. And it's like, come on, get on the wagon, Dad. Right? There's no greater message than that. Like, get on the wagon. The you know, not always in life do we have an opportunity that something comes at you and says, you know, get in this car. You're going. You have won the lottery. Here's the car. It's waiting for you already. Interestingly enough, the traditional commentary, Rashi says that Joseph gave them a sign for Jacob. In what topic he was engaged when he, Joseph, separated from him, Jacob. That section in the Torah, when they were learning Torah together, was dealing with the heifer that was to be beheaded. That is the story about when a dead body is found and nobody knows who it is. So they, you know, you behead a heifer instead. Egla Rufa, it's called. And when he saw the wagons, it has the word Egla, which is Agala. And that reminded him of exactly where they were learning, where they had stopped learning. That's a traditional idea that they have been learning Torah together, but that section that they stopped at, that's the sign. When he sent him the wagon, it reminded him of that section that they were learning Torah with. And now I'm going to tell you a Jewish joke, okay? This is the most Jewy of all yeshivish, inner Jewish jokes, and therefore you will not laugh at it, okay? So don't be upset with me or yourself for not getting it. But basically, that it's going to say soon that in the Torah, in the next few verses, it's going to say that Joseph says, enough, my son Joseph is still alive. I will go see him before I died. And then he's going to send Judah to Egypt before him. And the commentary says, in order to set up yeshivot, to set up Torah learning institutions. So the joke goes, why did Jacob send Judah to start up a new yeshiva? Well, because he saw that Joseph was still learning the same section that they were learning in, and there's certain yeshivot, certain Torah institutions that learn small sections for a very long time. It's called Be'iyun, right? So he says he saw that he's been learning the same sugya, Be'iyun, for the last 20 years. Okay, it's time now to start a new yeshiva. Judah, go start a different kind of yeshiva. Don't worry about it. It's a joke that makes me laugh, but don't worry about it. Now, back to a very important part for us to all understand about this Torah portion. It is now Jacob. His name he's taken off the Clark Kent outfit of mourning, and now he is in the Superman outfit of Israel. And it says, Vaisa Yisrael, and Israel, and all that was his, set out. V'kol asher lo, v'yavo be'er ha-shava. Israel and all that was his set out and came to Be'er Sheva. There he slaughtered sacrifices to God, the God of his father Isaac. Why? Because Isaac never left the land of Israel. And now Jacob is willingly about to leave the land of Israel for Egypt. Remember last time Jacob left the land of Israel? He went to Haran. Well, his brother wanted to kill him, so he had every right to run away. But now, for just, you know, to be fed, can he be fed in the land of Canaan, right? Can't they send these carts to him all the time? Why does he have to go down to Egypt? And he feels really bad about it because Jacob knows that a Jew is not supposed to leave the land of Israel. So then he sacrifices in Be'er Sheva, really the city of his father Isaac. And he basically sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac, that same Isaac that never left the land of Israel. Isaac never left the land of Israel. And so since he never left the land of Israel, Why should I leave the land of Israel? So he beseeches God.
Vayomer Elohim liYisrael b'maraot halayla, vayomer Yaakov Yaakov, vayomer Hineni.
And God said to Israel in the visions of the night, and he said to him, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here I am.
And he keeps going. He says, Vayomer, God says, Anochi ha'el Elohe avicha.
I am the God of your forefather.
Al tira miredet mitzrayma.
Do not fear from going down to Egypt.
Ki legoy gadol asimcha sham.
For there I will make you into a great nation. It's okay. And Rashi says, do not be afraid of going down to Egypt. God encouraged him because he was troubled at being compelled to leave the Holy Land.
Yes, yes, there's a reason for you to go down. Anochi ered imcha mitzrayma.
I will go down with you to Egypt.
Ve'anochi alecha gam alo.
And I will also bring you up.
Ve'yosef yashit yado al einecha.
And Joseph will place his hand on your eyes. When you will pass away, Joseph will put his hands on your eyes. And Rashi says, I will also bring you up. He promised Jacob that he would be interred, he would be buried in the Holy Land, in the land of Israel.
In Hebrew, Heftichol liyot nikbar ba'aretz.
He promised him that he will indeed be buried in the land of Egypt, and in the land of Israel, not in Egypt. And here, it'll be here in the very city that I'm sitting in right now, Hebron. And so they go down and they bring Jacob to Egypt. He gets permission to leave. That's how much of a big deal it is to leave the land of Israel. You need permission to leave. And he gets permission to leave. And that's what allows him to go down to Egypt. And they take everything down and they all come on down to Egypt, the whole family. And then the Torah is going to go on a long list of all the exact names of all the people that came down. Judaism is this part of the Torah, it's a history. All these people came down to the land of Egypt. All of Israel, the people of Israel, the Hebrew people, the Hebrew nation, came down to Egypt. He sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to direct them to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. That's where they settled. Joseph harnessed his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen. And he appeared to him, and he fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck for a long time. And Israel said to Joseph, I will die this time, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive. And they go up to Pharaoh. Everybody, there's been a reunion. Now it's time to also be official. This is a very wealthy and important family of the viceroy of Egypt. They go up to Pharaoh, and there's the famous story that Pharaoh may ask you, what is your occupation? Tell him that you're owners of livestock, okay? And indeed, that's what they tell him, that they are shepherds. Shepherding is something abhorrent to the Egyptians, and therefore they put them all to be separate from them in the land of Goshen, which is somehow separated from the rest of Egypt. In any case, very interesting segment is that finally Joseph brings Jacob in front of Pharaoh, and Jacob greets Pharaoh. And this is a greeting, as is customary for all who occasionally present themselves before monarchs. Give a salute. This is Rashi. And Pharaoh says to Jacob, how many are the days of your life? Or in other words, how old are you? Or in other words, wow, you're really old. And Jacob says to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojournings are 130 years. The days of the years of my life have been few and miserable, and they have not reached the days of the years of the life of the my forefathers in their days of sojournings. And this is really one of the more troubling phrases. And in fact, the rabbis say that he gets punished for these words because they are really not very, very, not very flattering. Where's thank God for every moment that I've had alive?
But instead, they're kind of like, yeah, it's been bad. I haven't lived a lot. But here I want to tell you that there are some people who are also masters of something called Ayin Hara. My Sephardic listeners definitely know what I'm talking about. Ayin Hara is the evil eye, the kind of the eye of jealousy. And that when people are jealous of you, there's sometimes a negative energy surrounds you. And maybe what Jacob's doing is saying, look, who am I? I'm nothing. I've had a long and miserable life. Though there is some truth in it, right? He's had a lot of pains in his life, right? 20 years of being cheated by Laban, Lavan, the death of Rachel, the rape of Dina, and then the loss of Joseph for so many years, which we know that the Spirit of God did not rest on him. And even the name of the Tetragrammaton does not appear in all the Torah portions until it's like hidden away. It's hidden away during the period where Joseph is not revealed to his brothers. In any case, Jacob blesses Pharaoh and leaves. And the famine is going to keep going in the land very, very strong. And what's going to happen in the next section, the last section of this Torah portion, is that Joseph is going to do something weird. He's going to create basically a slave class because he's going to trade grain for people's belongings, and then finally for people's land, for people's belongings, and finally for their own freedoms, and they're going to become servants to Pharaoh. He's going to create a kind of serfdom. And this kind of serfdom really sets the stage for the Jews to become slaves as well later on. So Joseph executing a master plan, and one could criticize him for this, but he's executing a plan where basically he's creating this serf class in Egypt. And that's what happens. At the end, he gives them seed to sow the soil, but they become servants. And the final verse of the Torah portion is, "And Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they acquired property in it, and they were prolific and multiplied greatly." Okay? They basically started succeeding there. How could it be? It's not the Holy Land. Well, you see, the Jewish person has a role in the diaspora at certain times. And this was a time for diaspora existence and for the Jewish people to be built specifically within the melting pot of Egypt, within crucible. That's the word I was looking for, the kind of crucible. In Egypt, that's part of God's plan, so they'll all come out of there, and then we'll have the great holiday of the teaching of freedom and liberty through the holiday of Passover. But the stage is now set, and we've just everybody, let's breathe a collective sigh of relief. Everybody, go. Okay, that's how I feel. I'm like, good. We're done with this brotherly hate. The selling of Joseph, and then Joseph's taunting and playing and seeing and forcing the process of tshuva from the brothers, very painful, and also Jacob not having God's presence in his life throughout this whole period, very, very painful, very painful period. And so thank you, God, for getting us through these Torah portions, which are your stomach clenches up, and that's okay. You read through them, you learn them, there's a lot to learn here, but it's also okay to say, though it's beautiful, though it's godly, though it's truth, it's also painful to read it. It's meant to be painful to read it. It was a painful time. And so that period is now done. Now we're going to go to the last Torah portion in the book of Genesis, ladies and gentlemen. The last portion in the book of Genesis is coming next week. And that's very powerful because that's going to be the blessings of Jacob. And then we're going to get ready for a new book and a new gear all together. The book of Genesis, the foundation stone of the whole story of Israel and the Torah. And then what I said to you yesterday, really think about earlier. Think about the four elements, right? The land of Israel, the people of Israel, the Torah of Israel, the God of Israel. Those are four distinct elements. We were taught these four elements in the book of Genesis. And we're going to finish it up in the portion of Vayechi, that Jacob's life, he gets revivified, re-enlivened, and he's going to finish off his life with a great flurry of blessings. And then, when we're done with the book of Genesis, who's going to take it to the next step? Who's going to bring the Jews out of slavery, back to the land of Israel, and into Torah? Who is it going to be? It's going to be a person who's going to carry us through the rest of the whole Torah and basically carry us throughout all of our generations. Who's going to be the broadcaster of the great knowledge and the love and the Torah of the forefathers and mothers? You know who it's going to be. It's going to be Charlton Heston. No, it's going to be Moses. It's going to be this incredible, incredible, our great rabbi, our great teacher, Moses. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this Torah portion. I know it's very powerful, and it's been great to be with you. And once again, I wanna also really recommend to you that you plug in so many other ways. First thing I want you to consider plugging in. Go fly to Lima this, if you're in England or you're going to Israel, I don't know what. If you're flying anywhere around the world, pop into to Leamwood, UK. You get to see Rabbi Mike Foyer there, Eve Harrow, Ashley Perry, Ari King, great people, and I wish I was there myself. It's going to be a great week of learning. Of course, our network has many, many great new shows that are so powerful and really will plug you in daily and weekly to the story of Israel. I want you to remember to donate, and I want you to go to yishaifleisher.com. You can write me an email right from the site or donate right there. And remember, it's not donating to me. It's for you to be a broadcaster of Torah and of the truth of Israel, the light of Israel. I want to recommend that you check out Tehelet, T-E-K-H, Tehelet.com. And I'm going to be doing more giveaways soon. And but what an honor it is to, yeah, sure, it's great to win something, but it's also great to go to Tehelet and order it. Order it for somebody else. Give them redemption. It's redemption in a box, right? Redemption in a bag. You really are part of the great, and that's the blue light, right? That's the true blue Jew, the blue aspect of the land of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, because there is nothing that makes God happy when a Hebrew person on the land of Israel is keeping the Torah and is part of redemption. That is the greatest fulfillment of all of our dreams and aspirations. I want you to come to us here in Hebron and come visit the fathers and the mothers who need to see you. You got to give kovod. You got to give honor and respect. And I want to also say that I honor and respect you. If you've listened to the end of the show, I want you to write to me, and please write me. If you listen to the end of the show, the way I'll know is that if you say hashtag Yishai monologue is also good. Okay. Or some, you know what? Some, no, you know what? You come up with a hashtag that'll make me feel like, even though I'm monologuing without Rabbi Mike with me, it's still a good show. So do me a favor, folks, and write me some kind of happy hashtag that Yishai alone is just as good. That makes me happy. In any case, keep yourself happy. Keep yourself joyful. There are many challenges and tribulations in life. Oh yeah, the last thing I also want to say to you is come vacation in the land of Israel, please. My God, what am I asking you for here? Come, take a vacation. Believe me when I say that. And the best thing that happened to me on this vacation was, guess what? There was no cell phone connectivity. It was awesome. There was enklita, as we say here in Israel. There was no connectivity, and it was just fabulous. Best thing that could happen. You need to know how to turn off your phone. You better turn off your phone on Shabbat. And I'm talking for non-Jews as well. Just turn that sucker off. But take a vacation, but especially come to the land of Israel and learn to love it. Just like you're learning Torah, learn to love this land by walking in it. There's so much, it's got so many secrets to tell us. So many secrets about faith in God. And that just comes through walking the land. Anyway, folks, love you so much. And I want to thank you so much for being with me here to the end. You are my blessing that I get to speak with you every week. And I try not to miss it. And I want to bless you here from Hebron, from the blessings of the fathers and mothers who are still alive. They're still with us, and they are still broadcasting, but we got to hear it. They're broadcasting God's message. He's broadcasting 24/7. All you have to do is tune in. And even on the 7, sometimes on the 7, he broadcasts even louder. That's the great Shabbat. And we're waiting for a great Shabbat of the Messianic period. That is the time to come, at the time where all the nations will see God's truth and presence, where the Jewish people will be a priesthood unto the nations, and where there will be a temple in Jerusalem, and we will together see the great priest lighting that menorah in Yerushalayim. God bless you, folks, wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Don't let anyone bring you down. You are chazak. That's right. Say it. I'm chazak. Be chazak today. Be strong. Stay together. Stay love. Stay part of story. God bless you, and shalom.